This is Audible.
Listening Library presents, We Rise, We Resist, We Raise Our Voices. Edited by Wade Hudson and Cheryl Willis Hudson. Read for you by Nyeme Kamara, Daryl Dennis, Kyla Garcia, Dominic Hoffman, Sullivan Jones, January Lavoie, Jennifer Lim, Guy Lockhart, Sanila Nankani, Adenrele Ojo, Bonnie Turpin, with Wade Hudson and Cheryl Willis Hudson.
We rise, we resist, we raise our voices.
Dedicated to those who advocate for and pursue a just society and basic human rights for all people.
Foreword. I'm sure just to touch this book, We Rise, We Resist, We Raise Our Voices, will lift your spirits. If you flip through all the creative gems put unto your hands and hearts by the gifts of people of color, we will hear your voices chanting praises. Then, as you read, you will realize this is not a one-time read, but a resource for rescue from any pitfalls of the day. Stand up, reader, and cheer for the good fortune that offers you this book to live by. Reading opens treasures, and this book is a treasure to enjoy. Having a safe space to imagine and dream and reinvent yourself is the first step to being happy and successful, whatever road you choose to pursue. Ashley Bryan.
Introduction. This book was inspired by our great niece Jordan. After the 2016 presidential election, she was distraught upon hearing who had won. She had heard the cruel and hateful words that had been spewed at women, those with disabilities, people of different faiths, and people of color. She had heard the talk aimed at taking our country back. Though she was only 7, some of that language of hate stayed with her. When she found out who the new president would be, she was frightened and confused, worried that the world as she knew it was in imminent danger.
We were so troubled. We knew there were thousands, no, millions of young people like Jordan, and perhaps like you too, who were fearful about the future. What could we tell you, we wondered? What words of comfort could we offer? How could we reach out to you the way others had reached out to us when we were your age and faced difficult challenges that seemed too big for us to handle?
So the idea for this treasury was born. Yes, we are living in challenging times, but we created this book so you will know that you are part of a community that loves you and can give you tools to help navigate the present and the future.
We grew up in the segregated South, when life for us was much different than it is today. Racial discrimination, prejudice, and hatred against African Americans were pervasive. We were prohibited from attending school with white children, so we went to all black schools. We couldn't go to the public library that whites used. We were forced to sit in a special section in movie theaters. We couldn't even try on clothes or shoes from the stores downtown.
Our parents had to purchase them, bring them home, and then see if they were a good fit. If they weren't, the items couldn't be returned. If there was no fountain designated colored or Negro in the store, we had to wait until we got home to get a drink of water or find another establishment that had a fountain for us. Our parents were not allowed to vote. This segregated but unequal system we were forced to endure was extremely trying and often frightening. Yet, in our all-black communities, we were embraced by accepting arms, motivated by encouraging words, and sheltered by watchful eyes that probed for signs of lurking dangers seeking to engulf us. We were loved. We knew it. We could feel it.
Today's challenges are different from those of the 1950s and 1960s, but we have valuable advice to share with you. Nuggets of sustenance for you, just as there were for us when we were your age. We invited children's book creators with diverse voices to share their perspectives, words, and images of encouragement and hope and love for you. These talented and thoughtful authors and illustrators have already been creating wonderful books with you in mind. Within this collection, there's a letter from a parent to her children on kindness. There's advice on how to become confident and mindful. There are words of wisdom about finding and keeping friends. There are reminders of how to use the golden rule, how to cope with bullying, and how to face internal uncertainty. And there's an essay on how young people can change the world.
Challenges, some seemingly daunting, will come and go. There will be dark days and days with bright, warm sunshine. There will be periods of hope and periods of despair. But when the dark days come, you must remember how the sun shone brightly on your face. When despair looms, you must grasp onto hope and lift it high for all to see. That way, you can face the challenges, no matter what they are, with the determination and confidence necessary not only to endure, but to grow in spite of them. This book is for you, to inspire you, motivate you, offer you love and hope, and encourage you to help make a difference.
We rise, we resist, we raise our voices.
Wade Hudson.
And Cheryl Willis Hudson.
What shall we tell you? Wade Hudson. What shall we tell you when our world sometimes seems dark and uninviting? What shall we tell you when hateful words that wound and bully are thrown like bricks against a wall, shattering into debris? What shall we tell you when respect for others and treating others as we wish to be treated appear as yesterday's borrowed wish? What shall we tell you when our differences are juggled like fragile eggs that could be smashed at a moment's impulse? What shall we tell you? What shall we tell you? We shall tell you that love, like cream and milk, will rise to the top, and hatred and distrust will be revealed as impostors. We shall tell you that peace, desirable like a restful night after a long day at play, is not far away. Reach for it. We shall tell you that respect for others, like a delicious ice cream bar, dripping on holding fingers, tastes better than contempt. We shall tell you that we love you, all of you, and because we love you, we will be there to help bring light to dark places. We will be there with peace and justice as our weapons and love as a soothing salve to comfort and embrace. We shall tell you that because we will be there for you, always be there for you, it will be all right. It will be all right.
The Golden Rule. Carol Boston Weatherford. Some form of the Golden Rule exists in every major world religion. In what may be the earliest version, the ancient Egyptians commanded, "Do for one who may do for you, that you may cause him thus to do." Confucius first put the rule to paper. "Do not do to others what you do not want them to do to you." By then, the rule had been around for centuries. One culture after another embraced the creed, and one generation after another echoed it. Jesus preached, "Do to others what you would have them do to you." Buddha instructed, "Hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful." Muhammad declared, "No one of you is a believer until he desires for his brother that which he desires for himself." This rule binds us as brothers and sisters. The Tao teaches, "Regard your neighbor's gain as your own gain, and your neighbor's loss as your own loss." The Sikhs simply say, "Treat others as you would be treated yourself." Zoroastrians proclaim, "That nature alone is good which refrains from doing unto another whatsoever is not good for itself." The Hindus deem this the sum of duty. In Judaism, the Talmud concludes, "This is the entire law. All the rest is commentary." As Black Elk, the Ogallala Lakota holy man, explains, "All things are our relatives. What we do to everything, we do to ourselves. All is really one." Many religions, many translations, but one world, one yearning, to love and be loved. That is more precious than gold.
A Thousand Winters, Kwame Alexander. The creative artist is the one wanting to make order out of chaos. Ursula Nordstrom. The other day, on the way for bubble gum ice cream, her favorite, my 6-year-old cautions me to slow down. "You are driving too fast, Dad," she exclaims. With a worried frown holding tears she's not supposed to have yet, or ever, beneath her raised brow. "And I don't want the police to take you away from me." On another day, we walk home from school like we have all year, waving at the crossing guard sloshing through the puddled tunnel passing the corner church, when she asks, "Am I going to vacation Bible school this year?" "Yes," is what I would have said, without hesitation, before Charleston. But today, my words are cold. Hope is frozen. Summer's here, but it feels like a thousand winters, and the world is not such a beautiful place anymore. "Dad, I asked you a question," she repeats. Last night, the sky was ablaze. Bolts of lightning shot across the night like our very soul was on fire. And I sat writing next to a sea of flames, wondering, if these are not times for poets, if words, sentences, and books aren't enough anymore, if my first mistake was listening to NPR with her in the car, if this middle passage of murder is becoming normal, if those of us who jumped were the same ones, if we can't survive this storm, how will our children? How will our children? She asks for 2 scoops. I give her 1. It's before dinner. Plus a topping, the red, white, and blue sprinkles disperse like little stars across her face and shirt. And she devours her treat, cone and all, so fast and so free that when it disappears, she's in disbelief. So am I.
We the People, Rita Williams Garcia. My dears, it is my honor and privilege to reach out to you during this time of uncertainty and distress to offer a few words of encouragement. This should be a time of excitement about what our new leadership will bring, not only to our individual lives and to the nation, but to the world. However, because of what our leadership has shown us through words, gesture, and action, many of us have cause for concern. Cause for fear for ourselves, our family members, and our neighbors. Cause for anger. Cause for mistrust in not only our process, but in what the new leadership will bring. Know this. We as a people and as a nation have survived uncertainty, unjust and unequal treatment at the hands of the powerful. Our various histories and current-day struggles are stories of overcoming, with an eye on opportunity and freedom, even during the worst times. In this nation, we can lift our voices to ensure that the Bill of Rights and Constitution are living documents. We must stand up and protect those documents through our words, voices, and art, and through our willingness to right wrongs in our own lives. I encourage young people to be of service to yourselves by honoring your minds and bodies, and by taking steps to build upon your many dreams. Be of service to your family. Take on one responsibility and be consistent with it. Be of service to your community in small ways. Study together. Donate. Volunteer. Forget cliques. Build community. Invite others in. Reject ignorance. Keep up with what is going on in government, whether it's local, national, or worldwide. If you can read, you can know. Even better, you can pose questions. In a free society, that's what literate, concerned people do. They read, listen, and above all, ask questions. Be of ultimate service to the nation by partaking in the process that those before you were barred from. Vote. The nation's founders were not perfect, but they built a political system based on liberty, personal pursuits, and rights, with laws to uphold them, particularly the right to disagree. They put in place the means to improve upon this system of government in anticipation of an evolving nation. They did so not knowing that the very system that they upheld in their times, slave owning, oppression of women, etc., would be in opposition to the more perfect union they sought to create. Nevertheless, in their wisdom, they incorporated checks and balances to protect the nation against the tyranny of the powerful and to ensure a democratic union. The founders didn't know that this would include all of us. And although they didn't have that complete and diverse vision of we the people, they wrote and signed living documents that would protect and serve the rights, pursuits, and liberties of we, the people. Yes, all of us, not some of us. There's no backward time travel, but only the future. You must know and believe that you are the future and that you are charged with the challenge of making ourselves, our families, our communities a living and perfect union through your acts of service. Write your letters. Ask the hard questions. Hold the leaders to their task, which is to serve and provide a future that ensures the rights, pursuits, and liberties of you. We. The people.
Prayers of the Grandmothers. Sharon M. Draper. I remember my grandma's home cooking. She'd hum and she'd mix and she'd stir. She could make buttered bones taste delicious, if that's all the fixins there were. "Stay safe, my child," she'd whisper. "Come home to me each night. The sun is gold, the trees unfold, and danger hides from sight." I remember my grandma's lap nap times, where dreams would lie wrapped in her arms. She would sing of old pain and lost glory, of the long-ago days on the farms. Don't talk back, she'd tell me. Move not to left or right. Stay safe, my child, she'd whisper. Come home to me each night. I remember my grandma's strong fingers as she brushed and she braided my hair. My scalp and my brain would just tingle as she wound her own memories there. Let them see your hands, she said. Don't run, just walk, hold tight. Stay safe, my child, she'd whisper. Come home to me each night. I remember my grandma's old washtub. It was battered and made out of tin. Warm bubbles made baths seem like magic, and nighttime and dreams could begin. Breathe slowly, she would tell me. Swallow pride and fright. Stay safe, my child, she'd whisper. Come home to me each night. I remember my grandma's soft blankets on a large, squeaky four-poster bed. The faint smell of mothballs and cedar and her warm breathing close to my head. The world is full of promise and dreams you shall ignite. So stay safe, my child, she'd whisper. Come home to me each night. I now give the grandmother's warnings with mac and cheese spoonfuls of love. I show them the joy and the rainbows wrapped in hope on the wings of a dove. Stay safe, my child, I whisper. Come home to me each night.
You Are Here, Denise Lewis Patrick. Sometimes if you're traveling in a strange place and you get lost, you might look at a map and see the words, You Are Here. That map shows you where you are and where you've come from. It shows you a way to get where you want to be. Many people have made this journey on Earth before you. We who love you have traveled through life, too. Our lives have created a map that you can always follow. Long ago, your people came across oceans of fear and cut through fields of wilderness to clear your path. We knew you would be coming. Through our struggles, we have made some bumpy roads smooth for you because we have walked them over and over again, trying to find answers to hard questions. We have used our anger as a fire to light up the darkest moments. We have looked for and found friends to trust, and those friendships have made us all stronger. We have kept faith that when one way was blocked by giant stones, we would find other ways. And we have. It's true that our roads sometimes got washed out by tears. So some of us learned to swim, some built bridges, and others kept their heads above the water until the water went down. And then we continued because we knew you would be coming. Now you are on your journey. You may meet people who don't understand you. People might say or do things that make you feel as if you don't belong. You may feel lost. You might even be lost. But stop a moment and remember that you have a map with you always. You come from people who have never stopped finding a way, building roads, cutting paths, trying to give you many ways to get wherever you want to be. We knew you would be coming, and we are your life map in truth and spirit and memory. You are here, and we are here with you.
Words Have Power, Ellen O. When I was a kid, I had a bullying problem. I was called terrible things. I was spit on, I was beat up, I was humiliated. All because I was a Korean-American girl who didn't look anything like white America. This was my introduction to racism. "Why don't you go back to your own country?" strangers would shout at me. They didn't understand that this is my country, the only country I've ever known. Where was I supposed to go? I wasn't a person to them, just a stereotype. Encountering racism was painful, but it was nothing compared to witnessing what my parents had to deal with. At least I spoke perfect English. But my immigrant parents, with their broken English, have suffered far worse. As immigrants, they encountered humiliating racism and suffered crippling poverty. And yet, they have never wavered in their love and support of their adopted country, their belief that the American dream had a place for them too. I was proud of them and ashamed of myself. I was the one who hid my lovingly packed kimbap lunch from my classmates to avoid being teased about eating weird food. I refused to speak Korean in public with my parents because I didn't want to stand out. I was embarrassed to be an Asian in a white country. But not my parents. Living in America didn't diminish their pride in their Korean culture and heritage. And when people sneered at their broken English, they reassured themselves that they spoke two other languages fluently, Korean and Japanese. When I think of all the humiliation they endured, I am both broken-hearted and proud. Racism taught me to hate myself, but my parents taught me to be proud of my culture, my heritage, to be proud to be Korean, even when faced with bigotry and hate, and despite my moments of self-loathing. At the worst of my bullying, my dad told me, "If someone hits you once, you hit them 10 times harder." I learned the hard way that this was not the best advice, especially for someone who was always angry. In fact, it was a recipe for disaster. But it also taught me a valuable lesson. Anger is both a powerful tool and a dangerous weapon. It should be used wisely, channeled to give a person strength and conviction. You might start with anger, but you need to end up in another place, a better place. And the only way to do it is to engage others in dialogue. Over the years, I have found that the best way to change someone else's mind is to sit down and talk and learn from one another. One should never underestimate the power of words. One should never underestimate the importance of changing one person's mind. Change happens one person at a time. So now, I must pass on that same pride my parents vested in me to my own children. I must remind them that hate comes from ignorance, and ignorance can only be countered by sharing ideas and experiences. The proof that we are all human.
Kindness is a choice. Jacqueline Woodson. Dearest Toshi and Jackson Leroy, each morning before you leave for school, I say to you, be safe, be kind. I think some days that because you're both still young, you don't understand why I don't let you leave the house without looking into your eyes and saying these words. I want you to see, through my own eyes, how much I mean what I say, that kindness is a choice. We can walk through the world choosing to think of others, or we could not. Each morning when you walk out our door, I want you to ask yourselves, what choice am I going to make today? I want that choice to be kindness, because right now, all around you, the world is feeling unkind. As a child, I was taught that I am in the world, but not of the world. This is what I want you to think when the world feels like it has lost its mind, when leaders don't feel like leaders, when adults lie and bully, when you know, in your brilliant and beautiful and loving hearts, the right thing to do and the right way to be. Already I see it, in the letters home from teachers. JL thinks of others when, and Toshi's kindness shines through. So I know that some of what I'm saying is reaching you. Hold fast to it. Hold deep. Walk through each day and out of it, knowing the blanket of love each of you is wrapped in and ready to open that blanket to others. I love you more than you know, and then some. Mommy.
To Find a Friend, Joseph Bruschak. Look into the mirror. What do you see there? It seems to me that you might view a friend there looking back at you. If someone says that isn't true, here's a few questions I'd like to ask you. Is a friend someone who's always there? Is a friend someone who's going to share everything good or bad? A friend doesn't care how tall you are. It's not through height that you see the North Star. A friend doesn't care what clothes you wear, or about the color of your hair. A friend sees how beautiful you are, even on days when you're sad. So look into that mirror, and when you smile, a smile will come shining back at you. Then look over your shoulder, and you just might see someone else smiling at you. And maybe it might be me.
Get on board, Cheryl Willis Hudson. The words of this popular song are sung in classrooms all across the United States. You can just open your mouth and sing along. There's room for many more.
It's coming round the curve, putting on its steam and brakes and straining every nerve. Oh, get on board, little children, get on board. Little children, get on board, little children. There's room for many of more. The fare is cheap and all can go. The rich and the poor are there. No second class aboard this train, no difference in the fare. Get on board, little children, get on board. Little children, get on board, little children, there's room for many a more. Oh, get on board, little children, get on board, little children, get on board, little children, there's room for many a more.
You Can Change the World, Burnett G. Ford. When I was growing up in the 1960s, the civil rights movement was in the news every night. My sister and I saw black people on television, our people, in the South, protesting unfair laws and demonstrating against the white people and the government that enforced those laws. They were being beaten by white police officers, and hosed and chased by vicious dogs, and shot at, and even killed. For the right to vote or to go to the school of their choice, or to eat at any lunch counter. In 1963, four little black girls were killed when a bomb placed by racist white men blew up in their church in Birmingham, Alabama, while they were going to Sunday school. Up here in the North, our Sunday school sponsored a group of young civil rights workers, little more than children themselves, to come to Long Island, New York in 1963 for a few weeks without conflict and fear and stress. My parents volunteered to open our home to a young girl, not much older than my sister Lisa and I think I was 12 or 13, who was demonstrating for her rights down south. She needed a respite from all the hate and cruelty and violence she was experiencing at the hands of hateful white folks almost every day at home. Debbie stayed with us for a week or two, and during that time we got to know her and love her. She inspired us with her bravery and her stories and her spirit and her determination to fight until she won justice for the black people in her town and all over the South. When Debbie went back home, we worried. Lisa and I had terrible nightmares. We felt like the world was coming to an end. The peace we had always counted on was gone. We were terrified that our new friend Debbie or some of her friends or family might be killed. We felt like there was nothing we could do. We felt helpless and hopeless. But then our mother and father told us we must never give up hope. They encouraged us to act. There were many things we could do, and we found that our actions gave us hope. We wrote letters to newspapers. We wrote reports about civil rights for school and hung them on the bulletin board. We wrote to the President of the United States. If we couldn't write, we drew pictures and made posters. We demonstrated and marched alongside family and friends in New York City. We chanted and sang freedom songs. We prayed. We made enough noise that our voices could be heard, and we turned the energy of fear and hopelessness into action to make changes in the laws used to discriminate against black people. When you are working with people who believe in changing the world, you can change the world. No matter how dark or scary or hateful the times, there are always more good people in the world than bad. It took a while, but we won back then with the passing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. This Civil Rights Act became the law of our country, and it guaranteed that all black people would have the same rights as white. It ended discrimination because of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. It meant that black people of all ages in the South could go to any school or live in any neighborhood or be served at any restaurant or use any public restroom they wanted to. When we raise our voices whenever we see something that needs to be changed in the world, when we raise them against injustice, it inspires other people to do the same thing. Then you will see just how many people are on your side. The power of all our voices becomes stronger and louder, and that can only happen when people start to act and inspire others to do the same. The good people won one civil rights battle back in 1964. But the fight is not over. Somehow bad people do come back to scare us or hurt us. So we have to keep working and fighting in our own way. Even now, we have to keep up the fight for people to be treated fairly, no matter if they are rich or poor, for all people to have affordable medical care, for people to be able to practice their religion free from fear of harm. And if we do that, if we take action to change the world, then we can surely win again.
Freedom.
Next. Lisa Klein Ransom. She grew up in the cotton fields of North Carolina, at her mother's hip, in her father's footsteps, sprouting tall and strong among the stalks in southern sun and soil. Her head bent, her back curved, as she dragged a sack behind her, blinking away dust, breathing in dirt. She chopped and picked soft fluff out of sharp bowls that drew blood. She bit her tongue when her daddy was told on settling day, after months of bending and picking, "You'll do better next season. But next season don't fill empty pockets or hungry bellies. Standing eye to eye with her mama and papa in the dark of night, she whispered goodbye, headed north. The next train. The sun rose on a city, budding tall buildings, fast walkers and loud cars, while hatred beat down on her neck, and fear blew in her face. She worked still from sun up to sundown, on a factory line clocking in one day after the next, hoping to make something beautiful blossom from nothing. She scratched and scraped away the next years and watched as Martin, Malcolm, Fanny, Ella, Rosa, Medgar, Ruby, Al took the next steps. Watched as they preached, marched, sat, stood, boycotted, sued, and voted, giving birth to a new crop, the next generation, built tall and strong, to brave the winds of hate and ignorance. Her back straightened, her eyes widened, her voice grew louder, and she began planting her own seeds up one row, down the next, at home, in schools, in pews, in voting booths. Her vote counted through one president after the next. Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush. From Obama, she sowed hope, reaped courage from rain and drought. In a world that says, wait, not now, next season, she stands in footprints left in the soil of those who came before, and those who will come next, who will never wither under the rockiest dirt, the hottest sun, the scores of weevils. She tills the soil for her people, who keep growing tall and strong through the next day, the next week, the next month, the next vote, the next election, the next president.
Drumbeat for Change. Kelly Starling Lyons. This world feels upside down sometimes, like a twisted house of mirrors where people in charge are bullies, where protesters of racism are pummeled, where being who you are can put your life on the line. What do we do with the worry, the hurt, the rage? We turn it into something bigger than us. We turn it into change. Together, we are a mountain no one can destroy. Having faith doesn't mean we are fearless. It means we believe and press on. Toward love. Toward equality. Toward a safer, stronger future. We press on and stay true to what we know is right. Throughout history, kids like you were right there, with picket signs and petitions, with heart and humility, with bravery and brilliance. They changed this world for the better, and you will too. Tell your story to anyone who will listen, to hear it yourself. You matter. You matter. You matter. The drumbeat of hope will always drown out howls of hate. Can you hear it? Can you feel it? Say it with me and believe. I matter. I matter. I matter. Beautiful you. I am in awe of all you are and will be. When you feel angry or afraid, remember what you hold inside. Kindness, courage, compassion. The power of people who made a way out of no way. who persevered and toppled injustice, live in you, always. March to that drumbeat of hope. March and know you are never alone, standing up and speaking out, pressing for justice, having each other's backs. We will create change.
The Art of Mindfulness, Evelyn Coleman. Even though you're a child, remember you are the future of our world. When I was a child, my father taught me that the heart of the living earth was in me and every living being. He reminded me to think about that whenever I felt anger towards someone. This is called the art of mindfulness. If you were to put your ear to the ground, you too would hear the earth's heartbeat. Now hold your hand over your heart, be very still, and listen. You'll hear that same beat inside you. That beat is also inside every living person on Earth. Sometimes you'll forget it's there, as many people have forgotten. People who no longer remember they have the same heart as others are mean to them, hurt them, and only care about themselves. But just because one person forgets doesn't mean we all should forget. We must all remember, and that begins with you. Don't think this means you can never be mad or feel sad or disappointed with someone. In fact, we need to understand our feelings because they help us figure out the world. However, not all feelings are real. For instance, we might feel scared of something that hasn't even happened or may never happen. The important thing to remember is that feelings are signals that make us think and make us mindful. Think about when you did something you shouldn't have. When asked why you did it, you responded, "I don't know." When you examine your feelings before you act on them, you will learn not to make the same mistake. If you don't examine your feelings and your responses to them, it will be much harder to become a mindful human being. Becoming mindful is one of the most important jobs on this earth. It means paying attention to how you are living in the world. You are here to bless the earth and to honor your creation. I know that you will grow up to be a person who understands how important it is to protect yourself and those around you, to plant the seeds of peace wherever you go. If each of us does our part, imagine how beautiful a world we would have almost instantly. A step in that direction is to make a friend with someone from another race, culture, or ethnic group. I don't mean just sit with them at school or play with them on the playground. I mean go home with them and get to know their family and invite them to your home to know your family. Sometimes it is not possible to do this if you happen to be in a family that doesn't want to be with people who are different. But you could do it when you're older. Once you engage in this way, you will appreciate how our differences make us richer, healthier, smarter, and more empathetic. Think about it. If every child made friends this way, we would have a more peaceful and accepting world. In less than 20 years, the world would be filled with people who are as mindful as you, who also hear the heartbeat of others.
One day, Poppy drove me to school. Tony Medina. 1. One day, Poppy drove me to school, like he always does, talking about my homework, science, history, and math. He made a funny face when I told him all I had to add. Lots of kids were in front of the building, and others were being dropped off. I turned to Poppy to ask him, "Will you pick me up after school?" And before I knew it, 4 cops came running toward him. I heard a commotion, looked to my right, and screamed, "Poppy! Poppy!"
I saw my papi go down on the ground, tackled and shackled and hands cuffed behind his back. I could not see papi's face. The cop with his knee on papi's back smashed it into the pavement as he grabbed a fistful of papi's hair. All I could see were papi's jeans and his construction boots. I screamed. The world started to sweep from beneath my feet, and buildings started to tumble, and I nearly had an asthma attack from my constant screams. One cop, a woman with the word ICE on her back, pulled me by my waist as I flailed and kicked in desperation. Students, parents, and some teachers crowded around as the officers held me to the ground while my papi was pushed into a police van. La migra! La migra! Someone yelled. Others laughed with their fat fish faces, taunting me with alien and illegal and get out and go back to your country. I shouted, "This is my country, you stupid doofus heads!" Before I knew it, a crowd of white kids surrounded me. But other kids, black and brown and some white, came to my rescue. Somehow, though, I was the one who was taken to the principal's office. 2. Now the school was split in half. A crazy group of kids wore Make America Great Again hats just to taunt us. But others, black, brown, and white kids, were down with us and not racism. In all my 9 years on the planet, I never had a fight. But a handful of kids wanted to start trouble. One day they scrunched up their faces and balled up their fists. We stepped forward in unison. We took off our jackets and our sweaters and dropped them to the ground. Then we stuck out our chests real proud so they could see our t-shirts that read, "I am not an alien. I am not illegal. Why don't you go back to your own country?" is not my favorite song. Get out is not my name. No more borders. No more walls. 3. The bullies backed down that day and moved on to their classrooms. The next day, the Make America Great Again hats had disappeared. Instead, some kids asked, "Where can I get the cool t-shirts?" We didn't get any more glares or stares. One of the boys who bullied me even came up to me and said, "My mom's a lawyer. She can help your dad." And as we walked to our class, he turned to me. "Guess what?" I said, "What?" "I'm just like you." I gave him the side eye and answered back, "A girl?" He laughed and I laughed, and then he said, "My father's from Croatia." 4. That would make the perfect ending for a movie. But this is real life. And they took my papi away. And once again, the world was swept from under my feet. And mommy's. She has to find a new job to help take care of us and help get papi back. One day, my papi drove me to school. A day I'll never forget. I get sad and scared when I think about where Papi is. I keep his photo in the gold locket he gave me last Christmas. I keep it pressed tight and close to my heart.
It helps to look at old front page headlines. Marilyn Nelson. The earthquakes, the militias. History, hairpins and switchbacks like a mountain road. Things fall apart, no doubt, but good people wake every day to thank and to ask what they can do today to make things better. People call things back together when they choose to act on behalf of our planet and all life, spinning with us on her around the sun. Worrying only wastes our limited time and darkens our skies with cumulonimbus clouds. All we can do is hold faith and go on, leaving our tiny footprints on history. Today's acts of good will change tomorrow. Good is. Good is in control. And good will win.
All nations are neighbors, and I wonder. Margarita Engel. All nations are neighbors. Deep, beneath sea waves, and high above, on aerial flyways, fish, turtles, and birds visit each other's homelands. Swiftly. While the rest of us have learned to wait. Patiently. Finding our own written pathways by sending slow words of encouragement back and forth. Sweet echoes of friendship. I wonder, does a butterfly miss its wiggly caterpillar days? Do tadpoles suspect that they'll soon grow 4 jumpy legs? How does the leafy future of an immense green tree fit inside this tiny seed? I don't know. But I'm going to plant many seedlings anyway, so that by the time I'm old, a whole forest will wave happy branches.
When I think of you, Sharon G. Flake. How are you, my love? Well, I hope. I've been thinking about you lately, so I wanted to check in to make sure you're okay. I see you, draped in confidence, walking like you own the world, looking fine, skateboarding, protesting injustice, helping out friends. My heart sings at the thought of what is possible for us here on Earth because you exist. What I admire about you most is your smile, your ability to make jokes in nearly any situation, and just how creative and entrepreneurial you are. I didn't have your courage and tenacity when I was young. Everything scared me. Boys, taking risks, being judged. Yet here I am. I made it through all my personal trials and tribulations. The world's too. You will also. Count on it. But know this. The world is larger than your school and neighborhood. Crazier than ever, it seems. Has it gotten you down? Made you feel as if you aren't as brave or in control as you once thought you were? If so, I understand. We had the Vietnam War and discrimination. My dad had Jim Crow, the Depression, and World War II. Every generation faces a series of storms that seem insurmountable. Your generation is no different. The internet and cable news stream reports to us nightly. Another black boy shot and killed by the police. Families torn apart as parents get deported. Swastikas and nooses peppering our landscape like weeds. Adults berating and brawling with their neighbors and constituents. Even the climate seems discontent, determined to bring out the worst in us all. Thankfully, it is in the nature of youth to look at the landscape, no matter how charred and forlorn, and see new growth, new opportunity, and visions of possibilities. Do you still see what is possible? What's good and everlasting despite the times and conditions we live in? Do you understand how important you and other youth are to us? When I think of you, I think of those who have come before you. Young and resilient, they lived during history's most tumultuous times and left their mark. Muhammad Ali, formerly Cassius Clay, was one of them. At 12, he was an amateur boxer. By 18, he was an Olympic gold medalist who later raised his fists against injustice. Malala Yousafzai from Pakistan was shot by terrorists who didn't think girls should attend school. At 17, Malala won.